How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico. How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Welcome back to the one and only Cavs the Podcast, featuring commentary from all of your favorite Cavs the Blog bloggers. Now, sit back, relax, and enjoy. Welcome to Cavs Podcast. Nate Smith here. Eli Kim, Chris Francis, and... guys, this is probably as disappointing as a pair of non-series losses could be. Would you guys agree with that in terms of playoff results?
Oh, yeah. Very disappointing.
For those of you not keeping track at home, the Cavs went up 2-0 on the Magic with a couple, convincing, if not problematic wins, and then... I believe last Thursday they had the worst loss in franchise playoff history. And then on Saturday night, they were up 9 going into the third quarter and lost the third quarter 37-10. And it was never a game after that. And I believe it was like a 27-2 run at one point. Is that correct, Eli?
I believe that is correct.
Yeah. And at which point, I mean, Eli, I know you've been burning to get this all off your chest for the last day and a half. So lay it on me, brother.
I've had some time to digest what's happened. And I think what exacerbated my pain was that I was in Orlando. I physically witnessed game 3, which made me want to puke repeatedly, and I was just devastating. I think it's super frustrating because the Cavs are a bunch of soft players, coaches, front office people. I mean, they all made a big stink about how they weren't ducking anybody before the series started. They did win the first two games. Maybe looking back, I think they weren't as nearly, they're definitely not, in my opinion, they're not as convincing as the way the Magic has taken it to the Cavs in Orlando. And what kind of concerns me is that this is 2 years in a row, definitely out-coached. I don't think it's out-talented in either year personally, but I do think there are serious questions about long-term fit, even though the coaching has been very atrocious in the series. And it just boggles my mind that, you know, the Cavs from top to bottom, from the owner, or sorry, the governor now, to Pobo of Kobe Altman, they just have not learned any lessons. And it's just devastating that were fans of this team, and it feels terrible right now watching it. There's no way to sugarcoat it, in my opinion.
For those of you following at home, Pobo is president of basketball operations, Kobe Altman. And I'm interested in how it felt in the arena, because watching it, it literally felt like JB was just frozen. Like, he didn't know what to do. No one on the team knew what to do. It just felt like an enormous leadership vacuum of no one willing to step up and try something different, play harder, you know, bring some intensity. It just, there was nothing. And to me, it feels like a team that just has absolutely no confidence in its head coaching and its leadership. What did it feel like in the arena? Like, did you watch the bench at all?
Yeah, in the arena, I mean, I'll be honest, I thought, first of all, I thought Orlando's arena and fans, they're great. I mean, no one was like, you have some, you know, every arena you're going to have, lack of a better term, scientific term, assholes.
Chuckleheads.
But they, you know, I think overall the atmosphere is great. Obviously, playoff basketball is different in every arena. I haven't gone to a home Cavs game, but felt like a really good energy. And just watching the game, it just felt like in game three, the Cavs looked like, I would say the biggest word is flat-footed. It just felt like no one was like moving at full speed, and there was zero urgency. And I think the only player who looked like he had urgency was Caris LeVert in game three. And even then, he was like picking up his dribble with nowhere to go. He almost was too aggressive to get into the paint and then just had no plan afterwards. I thought JB was not very animated at all. I thought he'd be super pissed the whole game, but he just kind of was frozen there too, like the rest of the team. And I'm sure, I think game four, he was kind of the opposite, where he was just lighting up into people. Maybe he swung the pendulum a little too much the other way in game four, but just there was no energy on the Cleveland side. Seeing it live, it was depressing. It was like watching, it felt like you were just watching a team that knew it was going to lose and just wasn't willing to even fight back. I think that was the most disappointing part. I mean, game three, it was, you know, no matter what happened, it was going to be 2-1 at worst. And it just felt like the Cavs, like, felt like they had earned something already. Like, it was a shoe-in that they're going to still advance. And,
well, and let's be honest, they've played like that all season. You know, they went on that big streak, and it's like that they're one of the worst teams at handling success that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
But they're also success that
pressure.
Well, yeah, but it's also success that is, you know, graduated. It's not like they want to, you know, you can be a loafer when you're LeBron James and you just won an NBA championship last year. Nobody on any of these Cavs teams has ever done anything. Except with the possible exception of Tristan Thompson, you know, to warrant that level of malaise isn't even the right word. You know, to warrant that lack of shit giving, I guess I'd say.
And to be fair, in game three, I did think Tristan Thompson was probably the most active and animated. Yeah, they were down 30, but he was still hustling. Like, you can't knock him for not being as talented anymore. So he was trying. But just the rest of the guys. I mean, I'm severely disappointed in Donovan Mitchell, because if he's the leader, he's the guy that, you know, everyone's so worried about him leaving, then, you know, let's be real. He's not playing like he can lead any team past the second round of the playoffs. I mean, it's not like he's having some amazing series right now and the Cavs, the rest of the guys aren't showing up. It's a combination of he's also not showing up. Darius is definitely not showing up. The only person who's showing up right now, I think, is Jared Allen. And the rest of the guys, like Strus, Niang, they're not showing up at all. They're atrocious. So it's just disappointing because there's so many levels of failure. And I think it has to start from the top down. And it definitely, you know, I think JB is definitely the easy answer to blame a lot of this. I think he gets the bulk of the blame because if you just look at what Orlando has done in four games, they've even started, they've gone to different starting lineups. They've played really big. They've played really small. They're just trying to find any freaking thing that works. And JB Bickerstaff runs the same freaking eight guys out there, same rotation, and expects it to work for some reason. And did it work in game one and two? Yeah, to some degree it did, but where was the adjustment? Like, you go,
I mean, to me, game one and two was a lot more about the Magic just not shooting well, especially in retrospect, than it was about the Cavs, you know, really playing awesome.
Oh, the Cavs played atrocious. I mean, their defensive rating is great, but the Magic were 17 of 73 from 3-point in those two games. Like,
yeah, and they just left a bunch of guys wide open and expected them to miss, and they did. But yeah, so it's not, and I think anyone would have realized that Magic are going to play better and shoot better at home, and they have, and it feels like the only people that didn't realize that were the Cavs. But before we kind of get in the rabbit hole of the last two games, I do want to say, Chris Francis, what are you seeing? And I know who your main culprit is going to be, but what are you seeing on the court? Before we get into rotations or anything like that, that is not working for the Cavs.
I mean, it's yet again, the offense has totally crapped the bed in the playoffs. We're back to where we started, you know, since last year, you know, in the New York series. In the New York series, you know, yeah, the defense gave up a ton of offensive rebounds, but they still, you know, kept the Cavs in the game. It was, you know, Donovan Mitchell, Darius Garland completely shitting the bed. And this year we have exactly the same thing. We have Donovan Mitchell, Darius Garland shitting the bed. It's awful. Darius Garland especially. He looks like a guy that's afraid to shoot the three-point shot when he shouldn't be. He looks afraid to take shots, period. He's turning the ball over at like an over 20% clip. That's insane. Like, you're just never going to win. Orlando's offense can only really survive with transition points. And so, of course, Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland are turning it over higher than average and giving them free points on the other end. And then, you know, with the rebounding, we're back to the same problem. It's, you know, Jared Allen's doing acquitted himself well, so I can't complain there, but the guy who's gone into the tank has been Evan Mobley. He's down below sub 20% defensive rebound rate. I love Isaac Okoro clocking in at 4.8%, which is worse than Darius Garland. So, yeah, I mean, it's so funny. We're right back to where we started. We fixed nothing about this team. Kobe fixed nothing about this team. And this is going to be even a worse loss because Orlando has no business really, you know, being this successful as a playoff neophyte.
It's hard to argue with any of that. Do you think they're going to lose a series, Chris?
Man, I thought your prediction was crazy, you know, at first. Now I'm scared you were prophetic. Like,
what, when I said I'm Magic worried, and six? Know,
Magic and six, yeah, yeah. That was unthinkable. You know, I thought, you know, Cavs and seven made sense. You know, I thought they were going to struggle. You know, Orlando's a great defensive team with a good coach, and they have the pieces. You know, it's a contrast of styles where it's, you know, Orlando has the wings, but not necessarily the size or the guards. And the Cavs have the guards and the centers, you know, but they really lacking in the wing department. I think really what's really showing up is the absence of Dean Wade, sadly. You know, hopefully he can start doing some peds or something to fix his knee, because it's sad that it's come down to that.
I think we'll get into possible adjustments after the break, but I feel you on the Cavs need to shake things up. So we'll be right back.
How do you feel when you switch to GEICO and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with GEICO feels just like that. Get more with GEICO.
Save big on your Thanksgiving feast, all in the Kroger app. Buy two, get three free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. Then get a juicy frozen grade A Kroger turkey for 49 cents a pound, limit one with a $25 additional purchase with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to Cavs Podcast. Nate Smith, Eli Kim, Chris Francis. We're going over what ails the Cleveland Cavaliers in their playoff series against the Orlando Magic. And for me, it comes down to a few different things. One, all year long, anybody who watched the Cavs knew that Georges Niang had no business playing in a playoff series. And he's still their backup big for all intents and purposes at this point. He can't rebound. He can't shoot. His shot has totally abandoned him. He doesn't have a quick enough release, and he doesn't square his shoulders. So he's just firing stuff up there just haphazardly. That is an enormous issue. He shouldn't even be playing. I think at this point, you need to play Marcus Morris and see Marcus Morris and frankly, Damian Jones. I mean, Damian Jones can't shoot worse than Georges Niang has. So to me, those are two enormous things. So just in terms of personnel, the other one, obviously, we've talked about, you know, on this podcast ad nauseum, Sam Merrill. But the bigger problem is really that no one on this team knows their role, or very few people on this team know their role. And one of the people that should know his role and does not, and has been, frankly, too empowered from the minute he got to the Cavs, is Evan Mobley. You know, we're in a playoff series. Now is not the time to develop Evan Mobley. The time to develop Evan Mobley was the first three seasons he was with the Cavs. And now, the Cavs got destroyed in that third quarter last night, and a lot of that was due to Evan Mobley's abysmal offense. There should be zero possessions right now where Evan Mobley is an ISO scorer. He has no confidence in his shot. He doesn't move quick enough. He doesn't have enough counter moves. And the worst part of all of it is, there's no reason to give him the ball, because the ball should be going through Jared Allen every time. He's literally one of the most efficient finishers in the NBA. Why you're even trying to generate looks for Evan Mobley at this point at the four is ridiculous. And it hijacked the Cavs' entire offense in the third quarter. Second of all, no one on this team sets a damn screen anymore. Everybody slips the screen every time. So three-point shooters can't get open. And God forbid anyone on this team set an off-ball screen. It just doesn't happen. And beyond that, you know, what the hell is Georges Niang even doing out there? He can't guard anybody. I mean, when JB said that Georges Niang was an underrated defender, that's one of the most idiotic statements I've heard all season from any coach. Like, maybe you're trying to blow a guy up a little bit, but he's not an underrated defender. Almost every analytic says Georges Niang is a below average defender and an average rebounder at best. He's not a good player. And when he's not hitting his shots, he shouldn't be on the floor. But the bigger problem is everybody on that team thinks they're a damn point guard. You know, you got Georges Niang thinks he's a point guard. Evan Mobley thinks he's a point guard. Where, meanwhile, Darius Garland's afraid to initiate the offense and afraid to shoot. And Max Strus has reverted to the player we all worried he would when he came from Miami and was just a role player. Well, that's what he is right now. He had a great start to the season, but clearly doesn't have the juice to, and the Cavs aren't running an offense for him to be an effective three-point shooter right now. And just the way the Cavs have structured their offense, it makes me feel like there is a lot of kind of simmering issues under the surface with this team. And the fact that they've elevated Evan Mobley, who frankly hasn't earned it on either end of the court yet, is a big problem for this team. And Jared Allen disappeared after Evan Mobley hijacked the offense last night. And I was like, JB, get your head out of your butt. You got to get Jared Allen back on the floor. He's the only guy who's been effective on offense for the Cavs. And that run in the third quarter, he didn't even see the floor for half of it. Like, he took him off the floor. It's just, it's mind-boggling. There's just no leadership. I would have fired JB a half a million times, but I got a lot of engagement on a tweet that basically said, the best time to fire JB Bickerstaff was last summer. The second best time was after the third quarter last night. And I don't know how you can give up a 27-2 run and have the trust of your team. And it was the same thing that happened in the Clippers game where the team openly questioned why they weren't double teaming Paul George. Like, the team has no faith in this head coach. I mean, I feel like these guys are punching their tickets for Cancun already. I just don't see them winning this series with the lack of faith they have in each other and the lack of respect they have for themselves with the way they play. It's really disheartening. I don't know. Any response to that, Chris?
I mean, I don't know what to say other than, I mean, I think it's definitely a problem. There's a lack of adjustments. You're right on the money about why hasn't Morris seen the court? To me, I'm not calling for Damian Jones. I am calling for Tristan Thompson, though. He's a guy who did perform well before he got popped with the suspension. And like you said, he's the most accomplished Cavalier on the roster. You know, why isn't he in, like, for 5 minutes to goon up with try to bait Mo Wagner into getting ejected? You know what I mean? Like, Tristan Thompson's the perfect guy to, like, start some shit with that guy.
Marcus Morris, too.
Yeah, exactly. Remember when he laid out that guy and got it earlier in the season? They went on to I forget what team that was, but they ended up winning the game, and They gave him the dog chain for that move.
Well, to me, a really telling moment was in, I think it was game two. I can't remember if it was game one or game two, when Wendell Carter Jr. gave Donovan Mitchell that elbow on the screen that sent him to the locker room. Somebody should have touched up Wendell Carter Jr. Like, you need to send a message. That's you can't be roughing up my guys. Like, somebody should have laid him out on a moving screen or something like that. Like, you can't let them intimidate you. And they've been letting Mo Wagner and also Wendell Carter Jr. intimidate them. The only guy that has been fighting back has been Jared Allen.
Well, and I think I've seen Niang, you know, be Niang chirps, but I mean, what a loser. You know what I mean? He can't freaking play. So it's
no,
like, he's basically motivating the Magic to play better is all he's been doing. But yeah, no, I mean, like, I want to, you know, like, what does Miami do? You know what I mean? What do the Miami Heat do? They junk up the game with physicality. They run some zone and force teams to share the ball and shoot some threes or whatever. You know, where's the adjustment? Why don't we gunk up the game? You know, they're not a great shooting team. You know, pack the paint and force them to shoot threes. You know what I mean?
How do you not go back to Jared Allen after you're in the middle? I mean, did you guys all see it coming in slow-mo at the beginning of that third quarter when they just weren't scoring? And like why JB even waited till they were down one to take a timeout? It just drives me insane. Sorry.
I think the adjustment was trying to get the ball out of Wagner's hands because that's who heated up. you know.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter if you can't score points. That's the problem. The Cavs can't score points. I don't care about the defense when you can't score points and you're throwing up garbage. And the guy, your top scorer, in the middle of a run where you're getting killed, your top scorer in the first half, Jared Allen, is on the bench. What is that? Like, it doesn't make sense to me, Chris.
But that's just JB's offense. You know, JB is known for not being able to coach offense. We've known about this now.
But it's not even offense. It's play the guy who's playing well before you lose the game.
Oh, it's definitely offense because he's going to the well with I think partly what we're seeing is how much Dean Wade and Craig Porter Jr. actually helped this season. They were obviously instrumental during that run during the middle of the season. And now he doesn't have either of those guys as options to start blending in some of the more offensive minded lineups, like Sam Merrill, for instance, the Merrill Strus lineups, or, you know, using Karis more in terms of trying to load up on shooting and playmaking. So I think he's hamstrung partly by the absences of Wade and Porter.
I don't think he'd play Porter if he was there.
Of course not. Of course not. But then, at least it'd be a mark against him that we could check off the box, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I keep seeing idiotic things. They're down 20 in the fourth quarter with 6 minutes left. Why the hell is Donovan Mitchell even playing at that point? Like, you're not going to come back and win that game. I understand you've got to set the tone for the next game, but you also got a player that's clearly battling some kind of physical issue. You've got to protect him from himself. And it's yet again, the Cavs failed to do that. In a game that they clearly already lost, so why is that guy playing? It's so frustrating. Eli, am I taking crazy pills, or should Jared Allen have been in the game when the Cavs were getting walloped in the third quarter?
It should be Jared Allen and Donovan Mitchell. That's who highlighted the 18-2 run in the middle of the season. So go back to that. Yeah, Dean Wade is out, but then try Strus there. Try Marcus Morris there. Like, just try anything to go back to that instead of rolling out the same eight guys. And I hate
in the same order.
In the same order. And this is exactly, it's repetitive because that's what he's doing to us. And it's freaking killing me.
Yeah, and the Sam Merrill, like, when you've got Terry Pluto calling you out for not playing Sam Merrill, like a 80-some-year-old dude who, you know, whose peak was 20 years ago as a columnist is calling you out. He's not 80-something, but I do believe he's like 70. If that guy can catch it and your head coach can't, that person shouldn't be your head coach anymore. Like, it's – and there's half a dozen times they should have fired JB during the regular season. They should have fired him last summer. You know, you said it's 2 years, but it's really 3 years because JB failed to get him into the postseason or into the playoffs in the play-in game against Atlanta. And Atlanta hasn't done anything since that game. You know, and here's the funny thing. And now today I know why we'll see a new head coach on the Cavs next year is because for all intents and purposes, Frank Vogel is getting fired by the Suns unless they complete a 4-0 comeback, being down 3-0 in their playoff series. And if Matt Ishbia is going to fire a coach after 1 year, well, you can bet Dan Gilbert isn't going to let Matt Ishbia be the only one who can fire a coach in the offseason. Anyway.
Just one more other point I wanted to add. The Cavs only shot 17 three-pointers in game four.
120 for the series.
Averaged 37 a game in the regular season. And when you're losing, what do good teams do?
Shoot more threes.
Not the Cleveland frickin' Dinosaur Cavaliers.
I love it. We're running an offense from 1993.
Yeah. Oh my God, those Mobley ISOs. I'm like, what is this? But even if you score here, you're not coming back. You know, you've got to generate dynamic looks. It's so frustrating. Everybody's terrified to shoot on this team.
I don't know why. They're all shooting like 20.
Oh, I know why. When Sam Merrill can't sniff this court, you know, that pretty much says it all. The three-point shooting is completely devalued, not valued, whatever valued, negative value to this coach.
Well, and the insane thing is Sam Merrill wasn't any... I remember one particularly bad defensive game this year, but other than that game, he's been fine on defense, and he's a pretty good positional rebounder. He's a better rebounder than Okoro, which is just pathetic, and Garland, which is sad. But, you know, at least he's in the right space. At least he has some hustle to his game. Like, how do you not try something different like that when you're getting killed in the third quarter? When Niang came back out after that timeout and wasn't on the bench, I was like, this game's over. Like, they took the timeout when the Magic went up one, and then I think Garland took another timeout, and then other than that, it was like, okay, I guess they won this game. I was like, what are we doing? What is happening? I don't know. Chris, Eli, is there anything the Cavs can do to generate better looks, or is it just nobody's playing good enough to put any pressure on the defense?
I think the easy answer is just tell Garland and Donovan to let it fly. Donovan Mitchell's not shooting that well from three, but I would take a chance on just his volume anyway, you know, just him getting, you know, catching a spark and getting hot. Garland is shooting over 40% from three in this series. He just doesn't take enough. It's just insane. Like, he needs to be jacking 10 threes a game. Like, that's the way he's going to be valuable in the future as an undersized point guard. He's got to be
jacking. That's the only way he can be valuable in today's NBA.
Exactly. He's got to jack threes, and he's petrified in doing it. It's just crazy that, I mean, like, I don't get it. We're just beating drums of things that have been going on for so long, and now you know, it's so funny. Like, people were bitching all season long, being, you know, saying, oh, negative this, negative that. And it's like, this is what mattered. This is what the season all came down to, what they were supposed to do in the playoffs. And now they're in a dogfight with a team that they angled to get and are looking terrible against.
It's true. One of the things that I did want to bring up, like, do you guys remember about a year and a half ago when I said the Cavs should be looking to trade Darius Garland, and you guys killed me for it? Crickets. Crickets. Yes. You do remember?
Of course, but...
Eli, was I right?
But he's way worse this year than...
Oh, 100%. But is it injury? Is it the fact that the pressure's just gone up? Is it the contract? Like, now that he's making $30 to $40 million a year, is it just that he had his big contract and now he's gone Hollywood? I mean, I don't know what the story is here, but, you know, Rich Paul was on the sideline. What game was that? Game three?
Yeah, he was there for game three.
With Kobe Altman, right? Yeah, like what do you think that conversation's about, Eli?
I think if Donovan does want to stay with the Cavs, it's very likely Garland's on his way out. I just don't see how that works. I still think, like, I think it's more likely they'll get rid of Garland over breaking up the two bigs. That's kind of my sense. And I think that's part of the conversation.
Oh, I'm with you. And actually, I don't have a problem with the two bigs. I have a problem with the head coach that hasn't found an offensive role that makes sense for Evan Mobley other than, you know, play him at the dunker spot. And actually, his shooting hasn't been terrible this game. But they need a head coach that isn't afraid to let it fly, you know. Anyway, with that, we'll be right back. Welcome back to Cavs of Podcast. Elijah Kim, Chris Francis, I'm Nate Smith. Chris, what do the Cavs have to do to, I don't want to say win the series, to win the next game? How do they recover from two stunning collapses in a row?
I mean, I think it's as simple as 48 minutes of competitive fire from anybody that's on the court. You know, that's, you know, you talked about the 27-2 run or whatever. That's just giving up, you know, like that's just not being competitive. You're not even competing anymore. So I just want to see 48 minutes of everybody competing, for God's sake. What I think that also means is, you know, in terms of just practical things or whatever, I need to see a Tristan Thompson appearance if Mobley's loafing around. I need to see a Marcus Morris appearance if Yang predictably shits the bed. I need to see a Sam Merrill appearance if Okoro's running around just turning the ball over all the time and shooting bricks and never rebounding. So, you know, that's what it means in practical terms. But I think just as with those three, I never see those guys not being competitive. You know, Sam Merrill shooting crappy, he's going to keep shooting. You know, Tristan Thompson, you know, can't do anything, but he's going to hustle, you know, and he's going to mix things up. Marcus Morris, same thing. And Marcus Morris can shoot. He could, you know, space the floor a little bit. 2 years ago, he was a 40% three-point shooter. So, you know, that's what I think. That's what we need to see if they're going to pull something out here.
I mean, I want to take issue with what you said a little bit, that I think is one of the big problems with JB's coaching is we're in game five. Georges Niang shouldn't get another chance to prove that he's going to play well. He should be on the bench. Marcus Morris should have his minutes. The problem with the Cavs the entire season and for multiple seasons is there are no consequences for their quote-unquote star players and their quote-unquote rotation guys when they play like garbage. And I've only seen it once this year, and that was in game two when JB sent Garland to the bench and he wasn't closing halves and quarters because he was playing so poorly, and it actually motivated him to play better. The Cavs, Georges Niang shouldn't be playing. He should be on the bench. There should be consequences for playing like a shit ass. You know, playing like garbage.
Well, I'll push back on that because there's two lineups out of the top 10 or, you know, yeah, about the top nine that I'm looking at, which the only two positive ones are the ones that include Niang.
What are those lineups?
So we got Caris LeVert, Georges Niang, Donovan Mitchell, Jared Allen, and Max Strus are coming in at a plus 55.
Okay.
Then we got... I guess that one's, it was a garbage time one. So the other one was Damian Jones, Caris LeVert, Georges Niang, Isaac Okoro, Sam Merrill. So that was obviously a garbage time one, but those are the only two positive lineups out of the first eight that they've ran out in this series. Their starting lineup is a minus 10 with a 98 offensive rating.
Oof. Is it all Evan Mobley? Is Evan Mobley just dragging down the offense?
I would argue that it's also Garland, especially with the turnovers. You know, I think, well, there. I would say everybody's a culprit outside of Allen, but I would say, you know, Garland's turnover rate, Mobley not being able to hit anything, Mitchell not being able to hit anything, are definitely dragging that whole crew down. What's interesting is the only other one that I can see that's positive, plus 58 on the series, is Donovan Mitchell, Jared Allen, Max Strus, Isaac Okoro, Evan Mobley. So I think the two things, I think it goes back to Eli's point. I think you base your decisions off of who can you play with Donovan Mitchell and Jared Allen. That's what the focus needs to be. Eli's exactly right about that. Is who is going to complement those two the best over a 48-minute game? And then you base all your decisions off of that. And what I think it means ultimately is less Mobley, less Garland, because they're the youngest ones in the rotation. They're 22, 23 years old. They're just going to struggle in the playoffs. So I think minimizing those minutes is probably the easiest low-hanging fruit JB has right now.
Would you throw Okoro into that group as well?
Yeah. No more Okoro. I mean, it's obvious, you know, we're on year four of the Okoro experiment with absolutely zero improvement.
Yeah, it's super frustrating, and it's super frustrating. But I also, to me, I don't want to get into looking into next year and looking into the future, but I don't want to give up on anybody on this team, except George Niang, without a real coach to coach them. Because this coaching staff is, it's a joke. Like, Sidney Lowe is one of the worst coaches in the history. They have three guys on their coaching staff that were voted as being 10 of the worst head coaches in the NBA history. You know, you've got Luke Walton, you've got Sidney Lowe, and JB Bickerstaff, you know, who are all career losers. And they're all on this coaching staff. And obviously Luke Walton's only had two stops, you know, Golden State and Sacramento. And frankly, I'd take him over JB right now, but you know, somebody's got to coach better. They just, how are we in year three of Mobley and he still doesn't have a left hand? He still doesn't have a go-to move. It's just like, he doesn't know what his role should be. I don't know. Sorry, I'm just getting off on a tangent. Eli, I'm going to ask you the same question. What do the Cavs need to do on the court, scheme-wise, execution-wise, rotation-wise? And if it's play harder, which they, I think we all would agree they need to do, what do they need to do?
I think it's kind of easy for me, to be honest. Don't play the same eight guys. It's not working. And
the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results.
Exactly. I think my simple adjustments are, you know, I think you play Struce as a small ball four more next to. And yeah, it's really small in moments, but I'd rather see Struce out there trying to battle Paolo or Mo Wagner than Niang getting just run off the line. And Struce was at his best in Miami playing small ball four. I mean, he played like 35% of his time at the four in Miami. And that's arguably when he had his best time. Look, I get the problem with Struce is his shot is not falling, which I understand, and maybe simplifying it for him makes it easier for him to shoot. Because I think right now he's trying to rebound, he's trying to play make a little bit, and my argument is if he's not hitting shots, you might as well play Karras because he's a better passer anyway. He's a better playmaker than Struce. So I think you still play LeVert.
Didn't Struce have a triple-double right before the end of the season, though?
He did.
Like, I don't ever have a problem.
I would go the opposite way. I'd want to see more Struce at the two, three.
Go bigger. Yeah, the problem is who plays
the 4-5
then? Yeah. I mean, if it's Marcus Morris, I'm fine with that answer. I think you got to try something.
Yeah.
Yep. I think the problem is the reason I want to go small, though, is so you do play Sam Merrill, because I think you have to try. You have to just try to see if he can be a flamethrower one game.
Oh, absolutely.
In every game.
I also think you need Tristan Thompson out there with Sam Merrill. You need someone that's going to set good screens. And Marcus Morris, probably. Like, I would love to see a bench lineup with TT, Morris, LeVert, Mitchell, and Struce. Like, that to me is an offense that can, or a five that can generate offense. Still rebound enough to, like, you're not going to be a great defensive lineup, but you can still rebound well enough and score well enough to outscore the other team. I don't know. What else you got, Eli?
I think what you do with that lineup, that's exactly the lineup I was thinking too, off the bench. But what you do with that lineup is you pack the paint with those guys and just dare Orlando to shoot over top of you. I don't think they're going to shoot this great the rest of the way. And they're not even shooting that great. It's not like they're shooting 40%. I think they're up to like 34-35% for the series, which is like league average.
Yeah, but when you're getting back all your offensive rebounds, that's all you need to shoot.
Well, exactly. Yeah. So that's why these guys have to like Tristan and Morris. I feel more confident about that duo rebounding than Mobley and Niang. So,
what do you think happened with Jared Allen after his monster first half last game? Did he run out of gas? Did he get pissed off by not being featured? Like, he just kind of disappeared in that third quarter, and half the reason was because JB disappeared him. But like, do you think there's anything to this, like, Allen doesn't like playing with Mobley? He gets irritated that he's featured.
I think Allen gets pissed when he's the big that sits in the four out lineup, and he has every right to be. He was the better big in that situation this whole season.
I testify. Yeah, to me, Mobley ought to be the backup five now, but not in their four out lineups.
Yeah. And it's really funny because I look back at game one and two and don't think it's as positive. I think the Cavs were just somewhat lucky playing a team that had a worse offense than them against the Knicks last year, rating wise, because the Magic were literally, I think they had like an 86 offensive rating when the Cavs were playing Allen and Mobley together, which is, you know, super low number. But the Cavs offense was still well below, would have been ranked 30th out of 30th with like 100 net rating or 100 offensive rating in that. I think the way the Cavs have to try to get out of this is to shoot, keep shooting and not be scared to shoot. You're not going to win any games in the NBA shooting 17 threes a game. I mean, that's just not going to happen. And the Cavs should be shooting more. I mean, they just set a franchise record for threes and they're proud of that. And then they go to the playoffs and do this crap to revert back to 1954 or something. It's just insane that that's what they're designed to do.
I'm with you. And right now I'm going to ask you, Eli, the most important question of this podcast. What is that smooth music you got going on behind you?
My girlfriend's listening to some Chinese music down below.
Nice. Sorry about that. No, it's fine. It's fine. I was been boning up on my yacht rock this weekend, and I got a little Christopher Cross vibe there. So no worries. Anything else to add about? I mean, to me, it comes back to something that's been a problem for, you know, two or three seasons ever since LeBron left. The Cavs stink at setting screens off the ball, especially. And freeing up shooters. Like, they just don't do it. And the other problem is guys don't move without the ball when the offense is stuttering. And I think, you know, JB is going to be like, oh, we got to go back to having fun. And I think that's fine. But I think also you've got to scare the shit out of these guys a little bit. Like, I don't know. To me, like, JB should have taken a tech, should have done something. Like, I feel like he doesn't want to do anything crazy because he is already interviewing for his next job. And so he doesn't, like, he's just kind of playing out the string. And so he doesn't want to do anything crazy. He doesn't want to go off on the refs. He doesn't want to, rock the boat at all with rotations or piss anybody off. He's like, I'm already lining up my interviews for my next defensive assistant job. I don't see anything other than that. You guys can respond to that when we come back. We'll be back. Welcome back to Cavs Podcast. Eli Kim, Nate Smith, Chris Francis. Should have said Chris Friends first, because I've already featured our two names and I don't want a whole Evan Mobley and Jared Allen situation developing itself here. But but I did want to ask you, do you think JB's already interviewing for his next job? And that's why he's so lackadaisical, Eli?
If that's true, he should never get another job, because it's just, I think that, like, what's his market going to be? Like, what's his resume going to be?
Crumble cookie tycoon.
Ugh, Yeah, that's his wife. That's not even him doing it, too.
Oh, whatever. We all know how the cookie crumbles.
But in all seriousness, I just don't think he... I think he just knows he's outmatched. And this is, like, against his friend and Jamal Mosley. So the fact that it's his friend and his friend is whooping his ass in front of everyone to see, like, I just think he's just given up.
He's just in it. He's just retreated into his shell.
Yeah, he can't wait for Jamal Mosley's kids to call him Uncle JB. Thanks for letting my daddy win. That's what
he's wow. Wow.
I love it.
Well, I don't know. He's kind of... Wow. Chris, what do you got to say to that?
I mean, I think the opposite. I think there's no reason that JB should feel like his job's in imperiled. Like, I don't... You know, they just extended him. You know, I don't see him going anywhere.
When did they extend him?
It was just before the end of last season or just at the beginning of this season? I can look it up. Do we need hot Googling action?
It was after the play-in. After the play-in.
Oh, okay. So it was 2 years ago. Like... How many years are left? He's got probably, what, 2 years left on his deal?
Three. He has until 2026.
2026.
So two more years.
Two? Okay.
Yeah. So that's not, I mean, there's a lot of guys that get fired with 2 years left on their contract. Like, okay, I'm gonna ask you guys this. JB Bickerstaff wins this series. Is he going to be coach next year?
100%.
Hell yeah, no.
I think you don't think so?
I don't think so.
I hope you're right.
I mean, to me, you heard the rumors that he almost got fired after the Detroit game early in the season, right? Was it the Detroit game?
Yeah, it was earlier this season.
Yeah, like before they went on the big run.
Yeah, just before it, yep.
Before they went bum slaying. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, and I don't want to get into, you know, next season. But who is impressed? Let's turn this around a little bit. Who has been the most impressive player in this series? It's been, for the Cavs, it's Jared Allen, right? There's
not even close. Definitely, yeah. Jared Allen.
Yeah, like he should be getting the ball more, right? Like, he's been incredible.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a lot more action this game.
Yeah, I'm with you. The other thing I wanted to ask you, who is impressing you from the Magic? And I'll go first. I love the way Jalen Suggs plays defense right up to the line. That's what I want to see from Isaac Okoro, and I don't see it. What about you guys?
I'll go Franz Wagner. He's playing. He's balling out of control. He's the best player in the series right now.
Yeah. Yeah. At least the last two games for sure.
Yeah, definitely Franz Wagner. Not even close. And he also brings his brother with him. So
I love Mo. Mo is the kind of irritant that the Cavs need. That Mo Wagner would be great on the Cavs. Like, he's so irritating, but he plays hard. Plays up to the edge, like, and the Cavs don't have a guy on the floor that matches that right now. You know what I mean? Like, that can't be George Niang because he's too doughy to be that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have those guys. We picked them up. You know, JB just refuses to play them.
Yeah, I get it. Like, it's the same thing as last year when, you know, they pissed off Kevin Love to pick up Danny Green, and Danny Green isn't even playing. Like, JB's just going to go down with his guys, and it's maddening. Paolo Banchero has been really good, I thought. I like the Magic's collection of guards. To me, that they make more sense as a team in today's NBA. Obviously, they need more shooting, but they play hard. They play defense. I can't stand the dude, but how who's their Jonathan Isaac's been a monster this series, just not only with the shooting, but also with the defense, but also with the shooting. He's just had some backbreaking threes.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you bring that up, Nate. I was talking about this with another friend of mine about how the series is evolving into like a fit versus talent argument. Let's be real. I don't think any of the Magic guards are like great individually. Like none of them could run a team, it feels like, Gary Harris or Suggs. But it works because Paolo and Franz are like the essentially the point guards of the team. They're the playmakers.
Oh, for sure.
It's not traditional.
No, but those are the kinds of guys that played with LeBron. You know, yeah, exactly. You had your, you know, Anthony is very much like a Booby Gibson, probably a little bit more dynamic. And then Suggs is a much better version of, you know,
Eric Snow
or Ira Neubel. I mean, Suggs does enough on offense that you can play him. You know what I mean?
He's athletic enough on offense that he can dribble in a straight line and dunk and get you set up.
Well, yeah, and he's going to make a good pass. He's a 3-and-D guy. He kind of reminds me of Josh Hart a little bit.
Like a little smaller Josh Hart, yeah.
Yeah, like the intensity with which he plays with and the way he's always going after the ball. He's not going to be a guy that you could run an offense through every play, but you can certainly put him in a pick and roll or a pin down or whatever. And he's going to make the right decision.
Yeah, for sure. But that being said, I just think the way the Cavs win this thing is they got to shoot more. I mean, that's what it comes down to. How they do it, I don't know, but they got to shoot more threes. That's what it ultimately comes down to for me.
Yeah, shoot more threes and rebound. And give a shit. And listen to smooth music.
I don't know if you guys listen to the Fedor pods that come out every day now, but it does sound like JV's completely cooked for what it's worth.
really?
Because even Fedor is talking trash about how Jamal Mosley's like a first-time playoff coach. You know, this is his first head coaching gig, and he's just making adjustments, and JV has rolled out the same eight guys. And then he does kind of defend, I think he, in a way, though, he's also kind of hedging, telling, like, defending Kobe. So that makes me feel like he's closer to Kobe for sure.
But yeah,
you needed the shooters, so we got you Strus and Niang. And yeah, they're not hitting, but, you know, theoretically, they're better than what you had against New York last year, which I somewhat agree with. But it's like the Cavs are like, oh, we've got to find shooting, so we're going to find it in an undersized three and an undersized four and not address rebounding at all and just basically think we're going to be okay.
Or guys who can get their own shot with size.
Yeah.
You know, that's an issue as well.
It's the curse of the 6'8 player for the Cavs because when they don't have LeBron, they legitimately feel like they avoid at all times to find a 6'8 player that can move like a wing. Instead, they find a 6'8 player that's George Niang, which is incredible.
We're calling Georges Niang 6'8".
Yeah, well, that's
what he's listed at.
Well, he's got the waistline of a guy that's 6'8".
Yeah. I think Georges Niang is a great locker room guy, but he does not need to play 22 minutes a night. And it's just criminal that he's been playing 20 plus minutes a night this whole year. In the playoffs, it's down just under that because of some blowouts, but he can't be your 6th, 7th man if you're even thinking about competing for anything.
Did I lose you guys?
I was hitting the wrong button. It's that siren that you got going on behind you. She's bewitching me, Eli. Anyway. It's what the hell were we talking about? I can't remember.
Georges Niang 6'8 body.
Oh my god, he's
no wonder you blacked out.
Oh my god, yeah, no, all the blood went away from my head. I can't stand that dude. It's like, who gives a guy that guy what did he make? $25 million contract for 3 years.
$25 million too much.
Three guaranteed years, man.
Ugh. For a fat 29-year-old who's not even Kyle Lowry. Yeah, it's brutal. And yeah, and we don't want to get into what's going on next. Let's look around the NBA real quick before we wrap this bad boy up. Anybody totally surprise you in terms of the playoffs so far?
Heck Minnesota. Yeah. Minnesota. To some degree, the Clippers.
Chris Finch, man.
Yeah, surprising.
Yeah, it is.
Well, it's really Anthony Edwards, though.
And
the renaissance of Rudy Gobert.
Well, and a good top eight. I mean, who was the guy that you wanted last summer that the Cavs didn't get?
Naz Reid.
Naz Reid's fantastic. Yeah. Yeah, he's a fantastic player for them. Like,
he was man of the year, right?
Deservedly so.
And it just blows my mind because I think you look at that team and you're like, there are three other top six guys are bigs, you know? Like, it can work. It just, we just don't have the coach to do it.
No, I'm with you. And you don't have a coach that is inspiring any confidence in his team right now. That's the other problem. Like, who's the voice?
We need to get A-Rod to try to buy the Cavs. That's what we need to do.
Yeah, what's going on there? Cool. That's a crazy story. Like, Glenn Taylor's trying to back out of the deal and suing them?
They're good.
What'd you say?
Because they're good. He wants to be the sole owner when they win this year.
Well, and also I heard that they may have lost their funding
on the other side. That's probably what it has a lot more to do with it.
Yeah, that's a lot of moving pieces because they had it, and then I think people backed out, and then obviously the economy hasn't been great. So
well, because that tells you how much of it was being borrowed, and now that that interest rate is spiked, that they can't afford it anymore. Exactly. I mean, you might know something about that, Eli. You may work in investing.
Yeah, that's all I do. Investing, look at interest rates all day. But all kidding aside, I think definitely the Timberwolves are shocking. You know, they're a favorite to win tonight to close it out. I think the Knicks are really surprising. I thought the 76ers would definitely tie it up today, and they didn't.
That being said, the Sixers got absolutely jobbed in Game 3.
That is true.
But also, that's on Nick Nurse for just call a timeout to advance the ball. Like, you've got the game won. The only way you can lose this is a steal in your own backcourt. And, of course, he didn't call timeout.
Yeah. And it's just, I think those are kind of the only surprises, and I think everything else is.
You don't consider the Sixers a surprise? Or not the Sixers, the Pacers?
Not with Giannis and Lillard out now.
Oh, I didn't know Lillard was out too.
Yeah, he's out tonight.
Do you think Doc will survive the offseason?
I think he will, but more so because of the financial implication of that. You can't be paying four coaches.
Well, the Haslams, how many QBs are the Haslams paying? That's true. You know, how many head coaches are the Haslams paying across across both teams? Yeah, it's interesting. The Cavs play Tuesday, right?
Yep, Tuesday night.
Here's what I want to see. So what do you want to see coming from the Cavs? Going into that game. And I'll tell you, I'll start. I want to see and hear nothing. The Cavs run their mouths too much, and they need to stop talking and start playing. They need to be pissed off. I don't want to see any smiles. Like, I wrote in the live thread that somebody should have been breaking into hotel rooms and pouring buckets of water on people and running up and down the hall with a freaking pot and pan so everybody's pissed off as hell when they come into the game on Saturday. And we clearly didn't see that. Or we clearly didn't see it after halftime. Like, I just want everybody to shut up, be mad, and kick some ass for 48 minutes. Do they have that in them, Chris?
I have no idea. Probably not. I mean, I'm expecting JB to do the same thing over and over again. So, but, you know, maybe, you know, I think what I want to see is Mitchell and Garland hijacking the offense and just launching some threes. That's what I want to see.
Okay. I want to see, yeah, I want to see Garland shooting more regardless. Like, if they're taking away the three, then shoot a mid-ranger. Like, do something, because your team needs you to shoot. Everyone else is afraid to shoot who isn't named Jared Allen or Donovan Mitchell. So
yeah, no, that's a good point about his mid-range game. Totally gone this season after being awesome last year.
Yeah, and you've got to generate offense somehow. Yeah, it's yeah. What about you, Eli? What do you want to see going into this game, attitude-wise?
I want to see them shoot, just play without fear. And here's a little stat that might surprise you, because it sure as hell surprised me. Darius Garland is shooting 41% from three on 5.5 attempts per game so far this season series. Let's get him to like 8 or 9. That's what he needs to do.
Absolutely. Both those guys. Both those guys, for sure.
If the Cavs shoot under 20 three-pointers in game five, I will rush the court because I plan to go to the game.
Let's go.
Just a
goal. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you two questions. Prediction, the Cavs. What's your prediction, Eli?
My prediction is Cavs do get some home cooking, and they'll shoot 40, over 35 threes in game five. And I think they do win. And I get they end
in
up
game
on a positive
seven?
Variance for game five.
Do you think but in the series, do you think they win?
I have to still hold out hope as a fan. It's biased, but I think so.
Chris.
Do they win game five? I think they win, but they don't cover. Do I think they win the series? Probably. But it's no better than a 50-50 proposition.
So my take on it is the Cavs will win, but they will only win in the long term by losing in six games in this series and jettisoning that coach out the door, and hopefully the training staff, and hopefully a lot of other bad decisions behind them. And maybe it might even be time for Dan Gilbert to sell this team. So. And then I'll ask you guys one more question. What do you got to pitch this week?
I'll go first. I got to dip out here soon. I'm going to pitch TV shows of video games.
Fallout, baby.
Yep. I'll pitch this because we lost the podcast, unfortunately, where I pitched it. And I just like this movement because, you know, we had Last of Us on HBO and now we have this. As a kid growing up, like, this is everything I wanted. I wanted a TV show or a movie of video games I played. And just
that didn't suck.
That didn't suck.
Yeah, like the Resident Evil, like it was nice, but it wasn't like well done.
Exactly. And I do think the series makes it better because, you know, it's hard to condense a whole game in 2 hours or so.
Well, and one of the sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're good.
One of the things I love about the series is the way they capture the really kind of stark tone shifts in the game of just like really dark and then just really weird, funny humor that's also got a dark back edge to it, and then like almost a saccharine facade of all these, you know, 30s and 40s big band tunes, and it's just they do a really good job of those tone shifts and the and keeping with the way that it works in the game for sure. And I think you're 100% right about that. It wouldn't work in a movie.
Yeah, and I also really like how it's being well received, so Fallout already has announced for season 2, which is great.
Oh yeah, it's like the biggest show around right now,
so definitely looking forward to that. And then one other quick shout out, I just because I was in Orlando, quick shout out to the amusement parks down there. amazing. Even as an adult, it was a lot better than I expected this time around. So
when's the last time you were there before this time?
I think I was like 14 years old, so it's been almost 20 years. Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah, Universal for my money is one of the funnest places you can go to.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I did both. It was a week-long trip, so enjoyed it.
Nice.
And hope to not go for a while. I need to recover financially.
What about you, Chris? Anything to pitch?
Yeah, I'll pitch. I've been binging on the USA television show Royal Pains.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's an old show from the early 2000s, mid-2000s.
Okay.
I don't know when it was, but it's just good mindless entertainment in terms of it's not serious. You know, you don't have to be stressed emotionally watching it, really, you know? So it's good. It's good binge watching. So I'll pitch that one.
Nice. Yeah. And I'm definitely with Eli on the Fallout. And I don't know if I have anything else to pitch beyond that, just because. I'm going to pitch The Spring, which we've got the spring peepers right now. There's a lot of wetlands around where I live, kind of near the lake, and the frogs are out and they just kind of have that awesome, you know, haunting background melody all the time with the nights quickly getting more humid and the thunderstorms coming in. So it's been an awesome spring so far. So That's what I'm going to pitch, The Spring. So
nice.
And let's hope that the Cavs offense can spring to life this next game.
Thank God. Please.
And with that, I'll say go Cavs.
Go Cavs.
Thank you for listening to Cavs the Blog podcast. Check back soon for some more fun with your favorite bloggers.
And we're out.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, "Happy Friday!" Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
This is the story of the one who, as a maintenance specialist for a historic high-rise, knows that vintage charm historically needs constant attention. Which is why, when it's time to upgrade turn-of-the-century mechanicals, they turn to Grainger. With easy access to a million-plus products and the scale to deliver when and where you need them, the right tools and supplies are never far away. So the one can keep that vintage building running like new. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.